That sounds really what's the word? It sounded sad.
Yeah, we're on chill vibes today. Vibes, boots.
Chill or just exhausted vibes?
Like too tired to sing in key, Becca.
I am running on fumes, I'd
I'm running
say.
up the road.
I don't think I'd actually be able to run up the road.
I would be able to run up. I was gonna say something really clever there, and I just couldn't think of anything. I was like, running is always like there's nothing easy about running. Running is always difficult.
Yeah, it is. Do you
I
know, I
wouldn't
have
be able
this.
to run up a bill.
Oh,
Get it.
that joke just.
Wah, wah.
Oh, yeah, kind of. It didn't land. I was gonna go in. I have this recurring dream that like I can't run properly, and I don't know what it means.
I think you're dyspraxic. Because that's my excuse. Welcome to the Grim Reader podcast, where the two dyspraxic hosts will guide you through
I don't
the some
know. I don't
books they've
know.
read.
I don't know what it means, but it's like, 'cause I
I
can,
keep
I
dreaming about
can
my teeth
run,
falling
but
out of my skull, but kind
ooh.
of like, you know, in Inside Out when they just drop the teeth in front of the camera.
An
Like they're.
inside out.
Yeah, do you know when? Okay. Sorry, we're starting this on a terrible tangent already, but in the Inside Out film, when they're simulating a dream and it turns into a nightmare when Riley's first moved and they like drop, she's like in school and like her pants fall down, like they drop all of
Yeah.
the teeth in front of the camera to make it look like her teeth are
I
falling
don't remember that bit in the film
out. That's what it looks
whatsoever.
like in my dreams. Like my teeth just fall in front of me, and I'm like, oh my God, my teeth fell out of my mouth, even though my mouth is below my eyes.
Wow.
Oh, you guys, welcome. My name is Nikki.
My name's Becca, and this is the Grim Reader podcast, where we do actually talk about books at some point. Do a little book review and all that kind of stuff. But as you can tell, we go off on rambly tangents about absolute nonsense.
I thought that was very like intellectual actually. Becca and I,
Ew.
if you don't know, Becca and I work in music and in specifically in a lot of administration for music schools, music lessons, and it is September. We are exhausted. We are absolutely exhausted. And this is just, I'd say any other music teacher listening to this already has their eyes closed because they know.
Yeah,
Yeah, they know.
it is. Yeah,
It's just you
it's
try and
tough.
organize it all in August, and then everyone forgets to reply until the same day in September.
Oh, girl, I was trying to schedule and timetable and all that from like July,
There's
and
no
oh.
point. Like, there's no point. No one's going to get back to you until the first week in the middle of September already.
It's just great fun. It's
Yeah.
a lot of great fun, but look, we're not going to complain. We love our jobs. We're just a little bit tired at the moment. Well, I'm not going to say just a little bit tired.
We are
We are exhausted.
the big tired.
Because that's what I've noticed when I edit the podcast, or like, okay, we're going to get into that in a sec, but I am so annoyed at myself because I'm so excited to record, but I sound so tired. I
I
sound
know.
so.
Because I feel like we made the mistake of talking for half an hour before this, and I think we actually burnt energy. And I think now we're even more exhausted. But Becca, I was thinking of things for us to talk about today, and I wanted to tell you something.
Go on.
So, our beloved Chloe, who long-term listeners will know as one of the OG Grim Readers,
Yes.
myself and Chloe are obsessed with celebrity gossip. And not
Okay.
celebrities, by the way, just the really bad gossip. Like that's
Okay.
the bit when I'm like, ooh, who's sleeping with who? And I don't really know them until I hear the gossip. You know what I mean?
Okay, yes.
We started listening to a really good podcast called Behind the Pines. No, sorry, that's the joke. It's Behind the Blinds.
Oh, okay.
It's very, very, very fun. And they just talk about all of these upcoming rumors with celebrities. They do a really, really good episode on kind of like the really dramatic, funny ones, like Lea Michele from Glee, who can't read,
Oh, yeah.
and also, but like they do heavy ones like Ezra Miller and Shia LaBeouf, who would have a really tumultuous time in Hollywood. And I think there should be an upcoming one on our favorite bit of spice at the minute. The Don't Worry, Darling.
Yeah, that that's
Oh
just
no.
over, like taken over everything online.
I need a non-fiction novel explaining this from the ground up, because I just lost my life in that video when Harry Styles is being interviewed about the film. He's like, yeah, so the really cool thing about this movie is it's
It
like a
feels
movie.
like a movie,
And Chris
and
Pine is just sitting there and he's like, what is going
Chris Pine
on?
just completely dissociated during all of that.
Oh yeah. And then he
Like
got
the
spit on.
interviews, like when they had the huge panel thing, completely dissociated as well.
Yeah.
And like I
Oh.
think I was reading like that he has like he's big time in the, I can't remember his family, but like they have a big history of films and all that, and like he's sitting beside this person who's like, it feels like a movie. And your man's like,
I know, like he's like a hardcore, like acted since he was three kind of a person, and then Harry's
I
just,
like him. I like Chris Pine.
I do too. Yeah, no, I do too. But like he's an established actor next to Harry Styles, who like, we've all seen his X Factor interview. He's just a charming man. He's a charming man who has good music out. An actor he is not, but we just love seeing him because he's a very charming man. I can't believe he got
Can't.
paid more than Florence Pugh.
Let's. Well, your one has come out. Olivia Wilde has come out saying that, like, that's not true, but you're like, that could be easily found out what people have been paid.
Yeah. Oh.
But can I just say, going back to Chris Pine, what made me absolutely adore him even more was that he brought a little disposable camera with him and then hyped up Florence Pugh on the red carpet.
Oh, that is so cute. And did
That
you see when
melted
Florence
my
Pugh
heart.
brought her granny out?
You know,
Oh.
I just love Florence Pugh.
I just think she's a cool lady.
She's a very cool lady, and I think I just love her acting as well. I think she's remarkable. Now, if you listen to early episodes, I didn't know how to pronounce her surname, so I am saying correctly
And you
now.
were like, Puh, Florence Puh. And then I
Let's
think you
not,
said
let's not.
Puge as well.
I should not say Pugh. Leave me alone. I could say probably now.
You can
I
say it properly now. I learned my lesson.
learned my lesson.
Becca, did we learn our lesson to figure out who has to go first in our books today?
I think I'm first because I did a heavier book second last time.
Yes, you are
So I'm
first.
going first,
So for
and
anyone listening for the first time, Becca is now going to show me a book cover. I'm going to badly explain to you what I'm looking at so you can imaginate it. And imaginate, and then I'm gonna guess what the book is about, followed by Becca's book review. So today we are imaginating The Girl on the 88 Bus, and this is such a cute cover.
isn't it?
Oh, and Becca, like, are you gonna upload this or is this already on the
This
Instagram?
is on my Instagram, but
You
I
need to
am
put this on the Grim Reader
I'm
because
gonna,
Becca took the photo like in front of loads of flowers as well. It's all just very, very cute.
That's literally my bookstagram, is just all the books in front of
Your mom's
flowers.
garden. So,
Yeah, pretty much.
The Girl on the 88 Bus by Freya Sampson. It's this lovely, like poppy, like cyan kind of blue in the background with a big red, kind of London bus. In front of it, you can see like the different people in the windows. There's like a punk, there's an old person, and then we have who I can assume to be the girl standing in a yellow dress with ginger hair and sunglasses, holding on to the rail, looking like a summer queen. We're adding this to the index of the girl books right away. But usually the girl is followed by something that makes it a drama. And this one looks like it's a really cute, like chick lit kind of comedy romance kind of a thing, maybe. So I think The Girl on the 88 Bus by Freya Sampson. I think we've got an unnamed narrator going on. And the narrator is a writer in a magazine and he kind of writes random articles And he really wants like a big break article where you can be taken really seriously. But the magazine is very like, you know, kind of like a stellar magazine kind of a vibe. It's a bit of fun. We just want to hear about our star signs. And you, this star sign means that this is a movie you'd really enjoy, kind of an article. Like, we want the BuzzFeedification of media and journalism. And this guy is hating it and he's just not enjoying the vibes. And he is really, really trying to catch a break as like a serious journalist. So he tries and fails. He's in London and he walks around London and he's always got his dictaphone and his pen and paper, and he's looking to interview anyone he passes that like seems of interest. And it's very much like there isn't really anyone. Like, there's nothing really that grabs a story for him. And one day he's interviewing this lady at the bus stop who has been selling newspapers at the bus stop for the last like 29 or like 39 years. And she's like a little old lady. She brings out her little stool and she just sells the newspapers there. So he's interviewing her. She's very, very nonchalant. So he's like, "Oh, why do you do it? I sell newspapers. Why do you sell newspapers? To make money." There's nothing romantic about it that like he's looking for in his story. And as she's there, the bus pulls up and this girl is standing very like she is on the cover, kind of at the doorway, holding onto the bar in a yellow dress, and she's staring right at our writer. And they have one of those moments where it's like, oh my God, like their eyes are, they're looking right at each other. It's kind of one of those like, love you, kind of like
Oh, right, okay.
slow-mo moments. And the bus takes off, and he's like, who is that? And the lady at the bus stop is like, what do you mean? And he's like, who is that? And she's like, how am I supposed to know? And he's like, you're at this bus stop 39 years. And he goes to chase the bus like a fool. And then he kind of catches himself and he's like, what am I doing? I look like an idiot. And to be honest, there's going to be an article written about the guy chasing the 44 bus
The
before I
88
have an article.
bus.
The 88 bus. What? That was weird that I naturally divided that by two.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a psychology there. So he's going to be like, oh my God, there's an article written about the man chasing the 88 bus before I even have a fucking article written for the week. So he's kind of a little bit shook at like how easily kind of maniac he turns, but he starts kind of, he has like this whole thing of like noticing couples in public for the first time and noticing like two birds perched together on a thing, and he starts going like, oh my God, I'm really lonely. And he starts writing articles about like this weird change he's had, and he mentions the girl on the 88 bus,
Okay.
and it just becomes a phenomenon. Everyone wants to know who she is. The newspaper or like the magazine that he's working for gets like super popular, and they're all looking for like, tell us more, track her down, track her down. And I think that's how the novel goes, that like he's just like, it's kind of like, does he actually love her, or is this all this expectation around the relationship
Yeah.
because of how romantic the meeting, like their meet cute was? So I think like by the end he meets her for the first time and like they're just total opposites. And he feels very under pressure to make a romance out of it. And to be honest, so does she, but I think they probably like, it probably gets very serious. They get married. It's like this big almost celebrity wedding, but they just don't align and they're both feeling very trapped and very much like, I really respect you as a person, but this isn't romance, this isn't love. And I think that's this book.
Okay.
It's a
Well,
good rom-com.
it's wrong. I think I'm just like imagining if I was that woman, I'd be so creeped out that this man that
Oh,
just
yeah.
saw me on the bus is like, "You are my soulmate, and I'm gonna write all these articles about you," and
As
you
in, this
know.
is something that in the 2000s it would have been completely fine.
Oh
And now we
yeah.
look at it and we're like,
Oh,
what?
absolutely, yeah. That would have been like a massive, if that was made into a rom-com, that would have been massive.
Kind of the vibe of 500 Days of Summer. You know, at the end when like, well, oh my God, I can't ruin that movie.
Okay, don't.
It starts at a breakup. It starts with a breakup. That's all I'll say. But yeah.
But yeah. So you are wrong, but this book is very cute. So I had read The Last Chance Library by Freya Samson very close to the end of my holidays with Mateo, and arrived back, and literally it was, I think, my first trip back to O'Mahony's in Limerick. Went in and found her new book, The Girl on the 88 Bus, and read it. I was like, oh my God, so cute. I loved The Last Chance Library, which I'll probably cover at some stage. And I was like, do you know what? I'm gonna treat myself because I've been reading so many NatGalley
Yes.
books. And I read it literally within 2 days. My mom is now reading it.
Oh, cute.
Yeah, so I had to go and steal it from the big room. Just that I could, sorry, my brother is waking up and has decided to throw stuff on the ground, it seems. So we're going to be hearing
You're
some
fine,
banging.
sorry. Then.
What we have here is it is set in London. So
Woo!
our main character is Libby, and Libby has just moved to London after being suddenly dumped by her long-term boyfriend. Now, can I remember her boyfriend's name? Let me try and find it. Let me, because I'm just gonna say I don't like him. I flippin' hate him.
This kind of reminds me, what was your one's name in the flat share?
Tiffy has been horrifically dumped by her long-term boyfriend, Simon. And when I say I hate him, I hadn't even met him yet, and I was like, I already know that I'm not gonna like this man. I was suspicious, okay?
Sus,
Sus.
Amoogus.
It was sus. But so she, while she's on a bus, because like her life, she worked for Simon as well, so she's like, I can't work. She has to move in. Her parents don't want her living with them. She moves in with her sister and like ends up being a nanny to her nephew, and her nephew's so cute. Like, she loves her nephew, so she's like, this isn't a problem. But like, her life is just completely fallen apart, and she's like,
Kind of feels like she's relying on her sister as well.
so it's kind of like, oh, do you know? And like, everyone's just like, oh, he'll get back together with you. And she's like, you know, the way he dumps her is horrible. Like, so anyway, she's on the 88 bus and she meets Frank. Now, Frank is our lovely OAP. We all on this podcast,
OAP.
we stan the OAPs, all
Because
right?
I was about to say, like, I pictured when you said Frank, I pictured him as an old man before I did a love interest for Libby, like the 20-something year old. I was like, oh, I'm so glad we have an
We have
OAP.
an
And
OAP.
it's also, we're recording this a couple of days before Thursday Murder Club comes out. So just another shout out to go and buy that book because that's realistically going to be our next episode.
Oh, absolutely. Once I get my copy is coming to Limerick, so I'll have to try and get that ASAP. But anyway, so we have an OAP, our favorite kind of character, really. And Frank, Libby has gorgeous curly red hair, and he immediately is like, oh my God, I finally get to meet you again. And she's like, I don't know you. But he apologizes and is like, I'm sorry, I've mistaken you for someone I met a long time ago. And he tells her of him meeting a young artist back in, oh, we're going back 60 years pretty much. So 1950s, 1960s, when he a young artist on the bus who he says changed his life. She inspired him to follow his dreams in becoming an actor, and he was supposed to go meet up. He was supposed to ring her to organize a date to go to the National Gallery, and he lost her ticket, lost the ticket with her number on it. And he's been riding the 88 bus since, trying to meet her to thank her. Cutest story ever. Cutest story ever. So Libby, after hearing the story, Libby's like, I'm need a purpose in my life, and I'm going to help you track down your girl on the 88 bus. And it's just such a cute story, because we see Libby and she's She's lacking self-esteem, she's lacking confidence, because I mean what Simon said to her was like, you're boring, there's no like excitement in our lives. Like he was like, I'm bored of her pretty much. And it's really awful. So this book was like a big hug, and I had high expectations after reading The Last Chance Library, and oh, it was so cute. I mean, the characters, I'm gonna say Frank is obviously my favorite. I flipping loved Frank. Because I mean, we find out, I will say there are some content warnings, just Frank does have Alzheimer's, and that is getting progressively worse as the book goes on. And he's viewing this as his last chance to kind of find the girl on the 88 bus before everything is forgotten, really. But then we have Libby, who is like such a caring and loving person, who was just treated so unfairly by everybody around her. Like honestly, the way her parents, or her mum in particular, talk to her, it's like they treat her like she's a disappointment. And you're like, Libby is such a wonderful person, do you know?
Oh, stop.
And it's just kind of, So then we also meet Dylan, who his first meeting with Libby does not go well. They actually meet on the bus, and then we find out Dylan is, spoiler alert, Dylan is Frank's carer. But Dylan does not look, he would stand out. Dylan is a punk.
Oh, he's the punk on the book cover. Stop. I love
So
it.
yeah, he is. He actually is. He has we've got a guy in a mohawk. That is Dylan.
Oh,
But
amazing.
Dylan is constantly judged by his appearance. But like if anybody gave him a chance to get to know him, he has a heart of gold. Like he's so
Oh,
lovely.
bless him.
So I mean, like each of them has, a different story that they bring to the book. And I mean, you can see that each has their own struggles. But really, it boils down to like this lovely friendship that develops between all of them. Like that there's a support unit there for them. And obviously, then you've got the story of the girl on the 88 bus. But it's just so lovely. And do you know, it was a book that, I think I was after reading something quite heavy hitting, and I picked this book up. I was like, oh, I flew through it, and I was like, this is just so
Oh, it
lovely.
sounds so wholesome and
It's so
nice.
wholesome. I do love her. I'll cover The Last Chance Library at some point as well. But why I had to go and steal my mum, well, it's my book, but my mum is now reading it.
Oh, are we getting some quotes?
We're getting the inspiration behind this. So,
Oh.
now apologies, I did not write this out when I was doing my old write up for the book. So, in the author's note at the back of the book, Freya Samson does talk about the inspiration of this. And while she was working on the Last Chance Library, she heard some amazing stories about library workers, but one in particular stood out. And it was when a librarian, I'm reading directly from the book, so apologies, a librarian was having a conversation with a 102-year-old patron who happened to mention that she remembered her father reading her a particular book when she was a child, but she'd not been able to find it since. It was just a passing comment, but the librarian was spurred to action. Not only did they source the original book, but then members of library staff took turns to record themselves reading all 800 pages so that the elderly woman could listen to the story one last time. Is
Oh.
that not? Oh, I'm telling you, my heart was already melted after I'd finished this book, and then I read that, I was like, oh.
God, that is just divine.
Isn't it? So, yeah, I'm very vocal about support local bookstores, support your local libraries. That is why, like, so unbelievably adorable and just, oh, honestly.
Oh,
So,
stop.
look, this book does touch on some topics that, such as dementia, really tough life choices to make. It does explore some powerful or hard-hitting themes, but I mean, it's such a lovely book to read, and it is really heartwarming. It is in that vein of, the flat share, just a really comforting read, and it does touch on heavier things as well. But oh,
And we got an
loved it.
OAP.
Oh, anytime there's an OAP, I'm like, yep, sign me up. Sign me up.
So good.
Yeah,
So
so
good.
this definitely, I'd say it's probably an 8 or 9 out of 10.
Oh, fab.
Yeah.
Oh, go on.
I did
It
love this.
sounds, it really does sound gorgeous. It's such a lovely subject matter look.
Yeah.
I'm
So.
going to send you a photo of mine. I'm very excited about this. Basically, I have the first edition of this novel, so it doesn't have the sleeve still. So I'm just taking a photo to show you. So, Becca.
Ooh, so what we have is we have got another Jonathan Franzen. Are we surprised?
Yes,
No.
my boy, my
So
boy.
Jonathan Franzen, and we've got The Corrections. Now this is an old looking cover. So what we have is we've got this is gonna get dark. I can already tell. So what we have is we have a black background. Jonathan Franzen is in white. The Corrections is in orange. Like slanted, and underneath that then is a picture. And think back to those admin, no, sorry, what am I saying? Admin, those advertising admins in the back of my head the whole time. Advertising, the 1950s was like huge for their advertising portraits. This is literally like those snapshots of a family having like their dinner, and it's like a massive, that looks like a roast turkey. The mum's putting it down. There's two angelic boys sitting, waiting patiently. Table is spread. Like, so what I'm going to say, okay, you sent another picture on, but oh, you sent it on so that I could see it. Oh, it's an Oprah book club. Is this the one you had the problem with?
We're going to get into
Oh,
some
okay.
tea.
So I can't really see what other food is on the cover, but I'm just gonna go with my story. So I'm gonna say that this is based around Thanksgiving, just because there was a turkey. So I'm gonna say that we meet this family that is picture perfect from the outset. Completely picture perfect. Think of, Desperate Housewives, Bree. How everyone's like, oh, I love Desperate Housewives, but let's getting back to the book. Is, completely picture perfect life. They've got two adorable boys. The husband is, this charming, handsome, high-earning businessman. The wife is just can do absolutely anything. Like everyone's like, why is her grass the greenest on this neighborhood? Like, why is How can she cook like a roast for every dinner? Or, it's all impossible, unattainable goals that these people have, or, that they can achieve. So what I'm going to say is this book revolves around the week of Thanksgiving. And we're learning some background about them throughout the book. There's flashbacks or there's people gossiping or whatever, but revolves around the week of Thanksgiving, when the now this is where it gets dark. My apologies, it's going to get very dark. Where the book starts off with investigating the murder suicide that happens in the house. So we've got the whole week building up to what happens, and then we find out at the end how it all happens, and the investigation starts. So we immediately go back a week, and I think that this book kind of explores. We're seeing how, at the start, we're seeing this picture perfect family, and then very quickly we see the cracks beginning to show, and that behind the closed door, it is not perfect. It is absolute hell. Do you know? I'm going to say that the husband is actually like involved in organized crime or something like that, and he's lost all their money. The wife is she's got her own problems, either with some kind of addiction, and that the boys are actually completely neglected, and it's all this kind of really dark kind of examination of their lives and like how that you can't trust appearances. And I think as well that we see, I think especially with the two boys, how they might have tried to reach out for help in that last week, and that people just were like, oh, but they said things that were quite dark, either about like, daddy hits mom, and they're like, oh, I'm sure they were only playing or stuff like
Yeah,
that.
because the family looks so
And
good on the outstretch, like.
exactly, and that these two innocent boys' lives were lost when they could have been saved. Apologies, I got really dark
You did.
with that. I got
Now,
really
it
dark.
is a Franzen book, so Franzen books do get dark, but they don't get that dark. So this book, The Corrections by Jonathan Franzen, by the way, it's on like every Read This Before You Die collection of novels. It's always in the top 100 books. Just always, it's a staple there since it came out in 2001. And also, we're going to get into a bit of the controversy behind this here novel because there's a little bit now, nothing really bad, just kind of notions. You know what I mean by that. So, Becca was onto something in the very beginning when she said it was about a family and it was all revolving around Thanksgiving, because this book is primarily, it is a family, like all Franzen novels, it's a family on the brink of collapse, and this is revolving a little bit around Christmas instead. So
I was
you were
close.
onto something.
Holiday event.
So I'm going to just tell you a little bit about the plot. Now, there's a couple of characters, and I'm going to let you in on maybe a sentence on each one. And then we'll basically, the book is so heavy in realism that there's an awful lot of intricate events that lead to this collapse. But I'm going to tell you about the one on the front cover. So the one that you were kind of touching in on. So we have Alfred and Enid. It's the late 20th century. We're kind of like, I'd say late 80s going into the 90s a little bit, in most of the book, but then we do flash forward to the 2000s again, and it's just building their past story. So it's the Lambert family. We have Alfred and Enid Lambert and their three children, Gary, Chip, and Denise, and they live in the Midwest in a place called St. Jude. And the major contention that we're leading to is that Enid, the wife and the mother, Enid Lambert, would like one family Christmas in St. Jude. That is all this woman wants. Her older son, Gary, is living in Chicago with his partner, and he's very successful over there. Or no, sorry, in Philadelphia. They're really, really successful, but very depressed. And he has three young sons with his partner Caroline, and they always go to Philadelphia for Christmas because of the young family. And they haven't been to St. Jude in about like 8 or 9 years. But Enid is increasingly putting him under pressure that, like, please come to St. Jude. We need one more family Christmas. And the reason they keep saying one more is relating to the father, Alfred, who has been diagnosed with Parkinson's and is in the early stages of that degenerative disease. And he is actually starting to show signs of dementia. And Enid is the one living alone with him as all her kids are grown up. And I think she kind of wants them home as like let's cling to the idea of the family, but also for them to see what she's living with for a lot of the year, I think. And I think she doesn't realize she's asking for help, but she is. So Gary and his wife in Philadelphia are having their own issues. He is avoiding admitting that he's depressed and an alcoholic. And Caroline doesn't want to go to St. Jude. She doesn't like his family. And she starts manipulating her three young children, the sons, to kind of take her side and be very like against Gary and telling him, you just are depressed, you're just an alcoholic, da, 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 don't make us do that. And it's a really tense situation for them. Then we have the younger son, Chip, who has he's been disgraced. He's just lost his job as a lecturer in a really high-end college that his parents are really proud of him for the job he was in. And he hasn't told any of the family he's actually lost his job because of an affair with a young student, which is not good. And then Denise, the daughter, is the youngest of the whole family, and she is a culinary chef, a workaholic, and she has been given a really good o job opportunity to start her own restaurant. So they're all at different stages in life, and Enid is just trying to bring everybody home. But we start learning why they're kind of all so far away from this family in St. Jude and why everyone's a little bit opposed to going back because things are not as they seem. Every character here is horrible in a big sense. And the really good thing about Franzen is he writes about really unlikable people, but in a very realistic way, so that you can kind of see, even though their actions aren't great, you can not justify, but you can see what led them to making that decision because of the pressure they're in and the fact that everyone else around them isn't really very nice either. Kind of has a big play on. So the scene that we're looking at the very front of the book that Becca was riffing off is you're looking at a dinner table and everything looks immaculate and perfect. And this is actually an event that happened in the children's childhood back when Alfred, the dad, was still working. And he had returned from work after being away for 2 weeks. And he barely said hello to Enid as he walked in the door. He immediately started criticizing her for the shape the house was in, despite the fact that she's been had the flu, and so have the three boys in the 2 weeks he's been away. He hasn't called her once since he's been on the road. It's very, very, very tense marriage. And they're all at the dinner table, and Enid gets revenge by making a not very appetizing dinner for Alfred. She makes like liver and kind of like burnt potatoes or something like that, and they keep calling it the revenge. Like the dinner keeps being referred to as the revenge, and it's this really tense family argument happening between every member of the family. But Chip is the youngest at the table at the time because she's pregnant with Denise, the younger child, and Chip is a very picky eater. He only wants to eat sweets, and he's under strict guidance by the doctor to not give in to him and only like make him eat if he's and then if he's hungry, he's going to eat. So he's sitting at the dinner table and he's having a hard time because he really doesn't like the food because she's made it horrible to piss Alfred, the husband, off. So then Chip kind of gets the repercussions of everything. He won't eat anything, and Alfred basically tells him, "You're not leaving the table until you eat something, but if you eat something, I'll get you a really nice dessert." Even though Enid is like, "No, we have dessert. I made dessert." He's like, "No, I'm buying a nice dessert for my son, but only if he eats something." So Enid leaves the table pissed off and kind of dotes on the other son, Gary, and kind of gives him a bath and everything. Alfred goes downstairs just to sulk in the basement, and poor Chip, age 7, is sitting at this table for 5 hours.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and Enid goes to bed. She puts Gary, the son, to bed, and Gary is about maybe 11, and he's like, "You know, Chip is still downstairs. He really doesn't like the food. He's not being bold. He can't help it." And he's like, "This isn't fair." And she's like, "No, this is between him and your dad. I'm not getting involved." She goes to bed. She puts Gary to bed, and when Alfred comes up, he's about to go to bed, and he spots that Chip is still sitting at the table, and he's like shaken. Because he's just sat there because he's so good that he doesn't want to disobey them, but he can't eat the food. He's got this big issue with food. So Alfred takes him up to bed and puts him to sleep, and he's fuming at his wife because he's like, "I can't believe she doted on the other child and not on Chip." And he's really, really, really cross, and he puts Chip to bed, and he's kind of apologizing to Chip and everything. And then he goes downstairs and he realizes that Chip has eaten around all of the burnt bits of the food, and he actually has made an effort to eat everything, and that he didn't get the dessert that he was promised. And Alfred, instead of going up and kind of doting on his son, takes all of that resentment to bed with Enid. And oh God, it's so sad. It's the saddest thing I've ever read. So this book, it's full of moments like this of just compounding drama. And it's amazing because he can juggle all of the characters he sets into the scene. So like every single character had a play in this being a catastrophic, like really harmful and damaging event in all of their relationships. And he's just the best writer at realism. So that's kind of what this book is about. The main plot of it is following the St. Jude Christmas, and also there is an experimentive treatment called Aslan, for Parkinson's that's showing great results, but you specifically cannot be on the trial for this treatment if you have any symptoms of dementia. And everyone in the family is starting to ignore that Alfred right now has definite dementia symptoms, and they're only going to get worse and more prominent. So that's the story of this book, and there's so much to it. So as you read it, you're just going to be shocked at how much happens. It's just amazing. And if whenever you leave a Jonathan Franzen book, it feels like it's something you lived through or some people that you knew, because everything is so filled in. It's not really like a fiction, like kind of just the best version and the highlights. It's everything that happens in their life in this time you have full recollection and memory of. It's amazing. It's so real. So the drama around the corrections by Jonathan Franzen, there's actually a whole article by The Vox that I wanted to quote a little bit from because it's really funny. So I'm just going to I'm going to give you a bit of info. So this book came out in 2001, and it was immediately praised as one of the best books of all time. And he just skyrocketed to one of the most important American novelists ever, ever, ever. It came out 10 days before 9/11, but it kind of became the mood for America on like how post-9/11 America was in terms of mood. So I'm going to read a little bit of the article from Vox. I'm going to read three paragraphs here because this is very funny. So, Jonathan Franzen, the novelist who has been lauded and reviled as few figures in contemporary American letters ever are, has a new book out. This is when Corrections came out, which means it's once again, for one of the book world's favorite pastimes, dismantling Jonathan Franzen think pieces. Jonathan Franzen has flourished crankily under controversy since 2001, when two big things happened to him. First, he released his breakout novel, The Corrections, and became known as one of the most important American writers of his generation. Second, he said he was uncomfortable with Oprah selecting The Corrections for her book club because she's picked a lot of schmaltz and become synonymous with the worst elitist white male snobbery. Since then, Franzen has been named variously the great American novelist, a noted crank, and a human Banksy installation.
Oh, wow,
Simply
Jesus.
kind of a prick. He has been embroiled in fights about Twitter because he says everything he opposes. He always talks about birds because he likes them. And conjunctions pro and anti them. The internet domain ciswhitemail.com redirects to Franzen's Facebook page. He's released some of the most celebrated novels of the 21st century so far, and some of the most despised essays too. He is a singular, or he is singular, a novelist slash public intellectual, and very much deliberately so, in a time when that career path doesn't seem to exist for many people anymore. So basically, he is very, very particular at who talks about his novels. I already know I wouldn't pass the Franzen test for fan clubbing him because I don't think I have enough accolades in literature
Probably
to
not.
appreciate him, because I don't have any. I do have an MA, honey, but it is in performance. It's nothing to do with
Girl,
anything Franzen
honestly,
would value.
even you talking about it on the podcast, he'd probably be like, I hate podcasts. And he'll have a reason for it. So, I
Yeah, he
mean,
would.
there's a lot of
He's
negative marks that you could
like,
probably find.
he's the type of person. Now, I adore the man. I will give him every excuse to act this way because I just think his books are that good.
No,
I
there's
just
no
think,
excuse.
oh, I'll be on his side forever. I'll just leave him be problematic and I'll support his wrongs. So he is very much like the type of person on a dating app who would have like sapiosexual. Like that's the vibe. You know what I mean? So he's very.
I thought you were going to go somewhere very different with that. I thought you were going to say he's the kind of person on a dating app that go, I hate people.
I think he'd do that too, but the thing is he hates us all equally. He just despises the human race, and he's a massive climate change activist. He's done amazing work in bird preservations and in very intelligent man, but he's a very cynical, very dickheadish man because of the state of the world through the lens he's looking at. And I guess you can like even look at the length of his novels. This book is 568 pages, so you can imagine how much solitude and how much like solitary confinement he must put himself through to write books of this like depth and complexity and length. So I don't think he sees people very often. He has kind of redeemed himself in recent years. So basically, the short story of what happened with Oprah, she picked it for her book club. He kind of thought like, I don't want it picked for the book club, and he started dissing her because a lot of the other book was chick lit and books that he didn't really think were up to his standard. And there was a definite like Everest, like I think very unaware misogyny happening, because at the time in like in the New York bestsellers, it was mainly men were getting the publishing deals for writing these big American novels, and women were getting publishing deals to write to other women with chick literature. So the whole when this got brought up about him being a bit of snob and a bit like, look, this is a bit tone deaf in regards to what women have to go through to get the kind of book deals that you get. And he kind of just made it out like it wasn't an issue of sex, and that it was very much like, you know, I'm that good. Like, don't discount what I'm doing. It's not because I'm a man. Whereas it's not because he was a, like, it's not because he was a man that he got the deal, but definitely being a man gave him way less obstacles to getting the book deals he was getting, and it's just not acknowledging his privilege. So when Oprah put him on the book club, and obviously all of Oprah's book clubs like make books sell out immediately. She's the biggest advertisement outside of publishing agencies. She had picked Anna Karenina as a book before his, and the publishers announced they were printing an extra 800,000 copies just for the Oprah demand. So she is mega,
Jesus,
and she was
power.
doing him a big like financial favor by putting this book on the book club. But basically, he didn't. I kind of get the vibe that he didn't need the money, and that he decided to publicly diss Oprah, but in the private kind of. What actually happened was he had every power to revoke it and not like choose not to put the Oprah Winfrey book club sticker on his newer prints, but he didn't. He put the stickers on
Oh,
while dissing Oprah, and
he
that's where the
wanted the
drama.
controversy.
He like this kind of like he wanted the controversy. He definitely wanted what Oprah could give him in terms of sales, but then he still wanted to diss her and kind of act like it
Oh,
like.
boy,
I
no.
know he acted, he kind of didn't want it to ruin his reputation of like the great American novelist that like is an intellectual scholar kind of a thing. So
Girl, what this sounds like is he wanted money. I'm sorry, but if he
he's
agree,
just, he
he
has a
put that sticker on
huge,
his books.
he did. So he wanted the money from the book reviews and the book clubs and the extra prints. And that's fine if he was dissing, like if he was like, oh God, I have to kind of take it because it's a better offer, but like, you know, I feel like I'm selling out or something. That could be a private conversation, but it's the fact, like with himself, but it's the fact that he just completely contradicts himself, like he's dissing Oprah while making money off Oprah. If he went one way or the other, I don't think we'd be talking about it in like 2022, but because like he was being a dickhead about it all. But then he's since made up with Oprah. When he released Freedom 9 years later in 2010, he kind of retreated and kind of was very much like Oprah added it to her best reads again, and he was very thankful of Oprah, and he's definitely realized his mistake, but there is that kind of running theme with him. He's very pro, like he's a massive climate change activist. He has an amazing TED talk on different bird species that we should be more aware of, because they're really like telltale signs to the state of the world right now and the extinction table and like all of this. He's, oh, like if you start reading his books, you'll just understand him a little bit more, but you have to just accept that he has a record of being a dickhead. So that is my review of The Corrections. Like all Franzen books, it gets a 10 out of 10 for me. I think Crossroads is still my favorite because I found some of the characters more likable in Crossroads, which made me root for them a little bit more. Whereas The Corrections, everyone's kind of a dick, but and there's a couple of chapters that were just a bit too dense for me because it went into patenting and it went into brain chemistry and like treatments for like Parkinson's. I was like, it's just a bit too heavy for me. So there's a couple of chapters that I had to kind of push myself through, but ultimately so worth it. 10 out of 10, Becca.
Interesting. No, I was just googling him there.
He also looks the bop off Stephen King.
Yeah, he does actually. But like the thing is, like that just shows his privilege more that did he think he'd get away with all of that?
He's very out of touch. Like
Do you know?
all of his books are about middle class tragedies and like middle class problems. He's
Yeah.
always been out of touch. But when like he is still delivering a very, very, very good kind of reflection of life in that class, whether or not you can relate to it at all. Like I don't know. I just think I hate when people fully discount him as like, oh, he's misogynistic. He's that because it's not that. I think an awful lot of it is,
He's just not self-aware.
yeah, it's just lacking self-awareness. And when you read his books and when you see how intricate and how deep and how much time he must have spent writing Crossroads, because I don't think I can't remember the gap between that and the last book, but it's not long enough to feel like he wrote Crossroads and had a normal social calendar at the same time.
Yeah. How old was he when he released Corrections?
Let me check. He was born in 59. So if we minus.
42. Okay. He was old enough to know better.
Oh, he was.
Oh boy. Oh
Now,
boy.
it took him, he took 10 years to write the corrections. And I, from looking at Franzen and seeing the way he talks and the way he operates in interviews in all of his novels, he's isolated. He's a very isolated person. He doesn't have any social medias at all. He never has, and he never will, to be honest. He absolutely detests modern day society. he's just it. I think, especially like someone not on social media and someone not engaging with things just because they're not academic, like that would put you out of touch very, very quickly, wouldn't it?
Oh, would, but like, I'm sorry. I mean, he must have had a team around him going, "What are you doing?"
Yeah.
Like, I'll have to read one of his books and kind of
You'll
figure out
have
the
to read
hype.
Crossroads, Becca, because me and Chloe have cast the entirety of the Crossroads franchise across Hollywood on who would be the perfect person at each role. It's
Okay.
just such a
I will.
brilliant book.
I'll have to get to it at some point. But anyway, look, we shall move on.
We shall.
We shall, because I'm beginning to get hungry. Oh my God, I'm so tired.
Yes.
But yeah. I'm trying to think of like a cheery topic that we can talk about before we finish, but no. Absolutely not.
No.
If people have opinions on celebrity gossip, do let us know. Do you know?
If you are in the middle of writing a book on the dramas of Kill Your Darlings, then please do
Do you mean
post us
Don't
a
Worry,
copy.
Darling?
Don't worry, darling. Oh, Kill Your Darlings is another movie.
Yeah, that's another one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just I mean it's just it's like watching something you're like, I shouldn't be interested in this, yet
It's
I
a
am.
slow motion car crash.
Yeah, it's just like, oh dear God. But
When Harry
anyway.
spit on Chris Pine, I'll remember where I was when I
Oh
found
my
out that
God,
information.
have you seen the one that's going around on the on line now of it's like Harry Styles threw a goat on Chris Pine.
It's all so
It's just like, oh my God, like that one. Oh, it just pops up in my timeline every now and again. I'm like, oh, that's so funny.
It's
Like
excellent. It's absolutely
that was just
excellent.
hilarious.
It
I
does,
love
it
that
really
one.
does look like he just spit on him and that he's cranky.
I know, yeah. He doesn't look cranky, he's just like,
Oh, I think he looked
I don't think
Cross.
he
Not
does.
Chris Pine, Harry.
Oh.
Harry looks cross enough to have spit on someone.
Okay. But yeah, and then all the memes about Chris Pine. I'm just like,
He's, I know,
he looked like he
national
was hating
treasure.
it. But look, anyway, we
Next
will.
time we speak, hopefully there shall be more updates on Chris Pine himself. We will be one step closer to the new Thursday Murder Club book, which is out this Thursday. And
No, can't
yeah, it's gonna be
wait.
great. It's gonna be out when this episode comes out. So pause the
Yes.
episode, run to the bookshop and buy
Yeah. If you haven't already pre-ordered it, because I pre-ordered mine. I wanted my
it.
signed copy.
I know. I didn't know where I was gonna live, so I didn't pre-order it, but
Yeah.
I will be in the bookshop at 9 a.m.
Anyway, with that, go support Richard Osman and Thursday Murder Club 3.
And Jonathan
And if you want
Franzen.
something very comforting, I would absolutely recommend Freya Samson's books because,
Yes.
oh, they're like a big hug. Anyway, with that, we shall leave you go. Go follow us on Goodreads, Instagram, at the Great Ring Weirder podcast. We have our own separate Bookstagram accounts that you can find,
Yes.
Storygraph, Twitter, Twitter, because I never post from it. And with that, we shall leave you go. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Yeah.